The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention?
We're on the eve of destruction.
And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
We finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is... The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
All right, it is going to work out. It is going to work out because the sun finally came out and Brooks is here. Brooksy is here. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show for this Wednesday. I'm John Warren and Brooks Hatch sitting across from me in the chair of knowledge. Been a while. It's been through Josh and then TJ's run.
Yeah, a couple of years.
And a few years.
But, you know, I've been a frequent, always try to listen and sometimes try to participate.
Always a great contributor.
I think I'm up to speed here.
Always a great contributor. And for those of you who don't know who Brooks is, we have some callers and participants here on the Joe Beaver Show who have been around long enough that we just call them by name. Kip, Dave, Brooks. Now, I don't know how you feel when Mike says, nobody knows this. Nobody knows this except for maybe Brooks and maybe Kip and maybe Dave. I'm like, yeah, don't say that because you're telling everybody they're dumb or that they might not have seen this crazy movie or this 1800s baseball player. But he's probably right.
I think what he's saying is that it's a polite way of saying I'm old.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I've been around for a long time, celebrating my, what is this, 2005? 41st year in Corvallis.
45, wow, that's amazing. So anyway, so we refer to guys by their first name and then other callers as well. But there's a few who have been around in different capacities. Brooks, a longtime writer for the Corvallis Gazette Times, covering sports since 76?
84 is when I moved here.
Oh, 84. About
76 in the profession. 84 when I moved out here from lovely Bismarck, North Dakota.
I thought it was earlier than that. And, of course, Brooks used to co-host the show with me for several years, in fact, before I was able to hire a full-time assistant, and then that would be something that worked into it, like... So we didn't have to pay outside money.
Got it.
And anyway, I'm just letting everybody know who you are and that you're not a rookie. You've been here before.
Nope. Associated with the Corvallis Knights in one form or another since 2007.
Are you still doing that?
Yeah. Well, I haven't talked to Dan this year, but when I left last August, that was...
I was given the impression that
I was getting invited back.
I'm sure it was just a formality.
Yeah, the off season Dan doesn't come down very often, and so I'll see him in February, and I imagine we'll get together. I won't have to go to arbitration this year like last year.
Did they have people man in the office?
Oh yeah, yeah. We still have Heather O'Malley's the new general, the new. I don't want to say the new Bree, she's the new general manager and the new Jennifer. And
very cool.
Colleen's over there. And, of course, Derek Buchheit is still over there. So, yeah, we have people there, but Dan will be down in February. And Dan is my boss, so I work with him.
Well, the Knights do just a great job. I mean, the Knights are a staple of this community. And for the Daves of the world who are out of town, he's in Tumwater. We got Kyle in Southwest Florida. We got some folks from Salem and Beaverton who listen in to the Joe Beaver Show. In the summertime, Knights baseball really fills the void. In fact, when I first came here and, going to Beaver games, and it was years before the Knights came into being, even though time goes by and they've been here for a long time. But it was years, and I remember saying, because it's always so cold during the beaver season, and I remember kept saying that the best thing there is, and the best baseball we're going to see is when it's freezing and you know, or even raining, and yet this beautiful facility sits during the summertime. But then the Knights came in and filled that.
Yeah, it's great to go to a game, and of course, you know, I'm working, but let's, you know, it's not like I'm putting in 9 to 5 in a steel mill.
Right. Let's come on. Yeah, you're not digging ditches.
No, but yeah, to be able to come to a ballpark at night, sit in your, you know, this is Corvallis, you always bring a sweatshirt. But man, sit in your shirt sleeves and have a couple cold beers watching
in the summertime.
A baseball game that gets over usually in, you know, 2.5 hours that we don't need to play the major league speed up rules because younger kids just play fast, and with a wood bat, there's not as much, you know, the kids or college kids used to a different kind of bat. So anyhow, I'm looking forward to another season with the Knights.
Last thing on the Knights, one of my favorite things about minor league baseball, and of course, this isn't minor league, but it's essentially the same thing.
Yes.
And one thing I love about that are the promotions, because probably some of the best promotions are created in minor league baseball. I just keep thinking back to the movie The Rookie, when Dennis Quaid's character is sent to wherever he was. It might have been the Bulls.
Durham. He was in Durham.
Durham.
They were a Rays franchise.
And the shot went from him on the phone, I think, with his wife, and it was a cut. It wasn't a dissolve. It was a cut to the camera on these RC cars being run around the bases and him trying to avoid stepping on them. And then the pullback shot of basically just him getting used to where he was and all of that, with this promotion in the background of people racing RC cars around the bases.
Well, that's minor league baseball.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Well, anyway, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Appreciate it. And we'll try to take everybody through the show today. I've been in contact with TJ. We're working out how we're going to do tomorrow's show. He already does it a lot using a couple of different, it's not Zoom, but different programs. So we were just discussing that. And so we'll figure that out for tomorrow's show. I don't know yet about Friday, whether there's a show or whether I beg you to come back or TJ.
Yeah, I can't come on Friday, but
that's all right.
But I figure you guys will figure it out. I mean, if Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbaum can figure it out. I was watching PTI one day last week, and they were like actually in the studio together.
Is that not normal? I don't watch that show.
Never happens anymore. That they're always, you know, doing. They're
it's
not
interesting
in the
though, because just a couple of texts back and forth between myself and TJ, and he's done this before when he does his Marine Layer podcast, or even when they fill in on 710 Cairo for the morning show. He's actually done it from down here when he was living here. And I said, well, don't we need to see each other? And his last text to me, which was about a minute before we came on the air, he said, we do not. I would think you do, so you can get visual cues from each other.
I would think it would be nice so you can see when it's your turn to talk and stuff. But, you know, how old are you?
59.
He's under 30, right?
Yeah.
He'll figure it out.
I know.
Well, you and I, well, you're in the space age compared to me, you know, with my Jethro Gibbs flip phone. And
you still have a flip phone. And Kip Carlson.
Still going to be a Luddite as long as I can hold out.
If you were reporting, would you have gone to anything MP3?
I would have to have a...
Because Kip has a cassette tape.
Yeah, I still have a cassette recorder, but I would have to have, obviously, a smartphone and all that stuff. I'd have to learn how to do, you know, I don't want to sound like Bill Belichick. What do you call it?
Snap face mark or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I would have to do all that social media stuff, which us older folks don't really like to do. So,
the Knights have a presence, though, don't they?
Oh, yeah. We have interns and stuff who handle the TikTok and the Facebook and Twitter. And it's not Twitter anymore, whatever it is.
They know it better.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they grew up with.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And for us, if we can do anything with it at all, it's a great accomplishment because we're learning it, whereas they just
think back to when you were a kid and you could do stuff that like your parents couldn't do.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the way life is.
Like putting in an 8-track tape.
Yeah, or
and not an album.
Yes, or even a 40, not a 45, an album, or you know, then it went to CDs. But you know, things evolve, and here we are.
Get in here and help me put this thing on. Where's the needle? I don't understand how this works. Jeff has a question for you right off the bat. Is Salem going to get a team?
Yes, Salem has a team this year. They're called the Marion Berries. It's, I think they're the Marion Berries, and like for Marion County.
Marion County.
They will be playing, they'll be in our division, in the South Division. They'll be playing at, I think it's John Lewis Stadium.
Not Kaiser?
No, they won't be playing up there. They'll be playing at John Lewis Stadium in Bush Pasture Park, right down there by Willamette University. They've done a lot of work. They got the, they were, Willamette or somebody got a $4 or $5 million grant from the state to improve that stadium. The lights are going in. I have been there before for a high school game back when I covered Corvallis or CV had a playoff game there eons ago. And it's a very nice field. I think that the Marion Berries are going to be really popular, that they'll be, you know, it's right in Salem. You'll be able to, you know, some people in that neighborhood will be able to walk and drive their, ride their bikes and stuff. And
is there any salacious reason or any other reason why it wouldn't have worked out to play in Kaiser?
Well, I think the other, there is a league still up in Kaiser.
Oh, okay.
That they have four teams and they have that stadium. And
they're doing their thing.
In order to get in the Kaiser Stadium, you have to work with their ownership, which I don't know all, but it's just the people who own the Salem franchise just thought, hey, you know what?
Do our own thing.
Yeah, we don't want to pay rent. We don't want to have to jump through hoops and stuff.
I didn't even know that Salem, that Kaiser, that there was an ownership, anything going on there.
Yeah, this the guy, I think his name is Walker. Jerry Walker or whatever. He has like a 99-year lease or something on the stadium.
Oh, wow, okay.
So anyhow, yeah, the Marion Berries, they'll be in the South Division with us. I think early in the season, I'm like maybe our second or third or fourth game of the season, our schedule's out. I don't know it off the top of my head. Yeah, we go up to Salem and play, so I think I'm going to...
You're going to call that game?
Well, if I don't call it, then, I'll certainly... If I go up there, if there's a way to call it, I will.
Yeah, because...
Pick out my phone and...
We've got to get it on the air.
Yeah, so I'm sure they'll have a play-by-play broadcaster too.
It's funny because Brooks will step in. Even Dan will do some play-by-play if Mike's gone, and that's always the case. And you did, I'm sure, this year. The league, I'm sure, made accommodations for you to be on the road for the first couple of weeks of the season because of Beaver baseball.
Yeah, that's how it is. Our first three or four series are always on the road because we have to leave Goss open just in case the Beavers get a regional and a super regional.
Very cool. Very cool. Brooks Hatch joining me here. I'm John Warren. This is the Joe Beaver Show coming up in about an hour from now at 12:20. We only have one guest today, so phones are wide open. The new phones. We didn't have any problems with it yesterday. We were just suspecting there might be, but not a big enough sample size. And yesterday went smoothly with lines one and two. And a brand new system. I mean, the phone... actual phone that we would use if I used a phone is very fancy, but they really didn't need to because in here and in my office, I still use my cell phone. I don't know if anybody uses the phone in here, but we have brand new ones. So Brooks is here with me today. TJ will join me tomorrow, but at 12:20, Michael Chaplin will join me. Associate head coach, Oregon State Gymnastics will join us, I should say. And we'll talk with Michael about upcoming gymnastics meet at home and some other gymnastics news, and they actually beat UCLA and were a half a point from beating Cal in their first tournament last week. I mean, that's really a pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it's really kind of for someone who has been not associated with gymnastics but goes back to the 90s and stuff covering gymnastics, it should be the other way around. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
when the Beavers – you don't expect Cal to beat Oregon State to beat UCLA. It would be, you know, a win over UCLA was always used to be such a big, and it probably still is, but.
But Cal's done a good job.
Yeah, Cal has really, themselves. The last 10 years, Cal has really built an outstanding gymnastics program.
Yeah, kind of quietly. I know what you're talking about because for the longest time it was Utah and UCLA.
Yes, Cal was not very good.
And Cal was not. Washington was real good. I don't know if they still have a top-notch gymnastics program, but they were always a thorn in the side for Oregon State.
Right, but now Cal has become very good.
Yeah, I have to ask you a question, and it might be a dumb one, and I'm going to ask it on the air because I don't care.
Sure.
Are the Beavers, what is the situation league-wise for gymnastics?
You know, that'll be a good question for Michael. My best guess is I think that there, I know that like men's crew is going to this thing called the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation. That it's It's all old Pac-12 teams, mm-hmm. Big West schools,
regional schools.
Yeah, that in sports that like their conference doesn't have enough teams to sponsor.
Okay.
So I mean, we might be in the Mountain West. It's called the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation or something like that.
Okay, all right.
We might be that. I don't think the West Coast. I mean, I know we're not in the West Coast Conference. So
you know that for sure. See, I didn't even know
think
that.
So because there's not enough teams that sponsor gymnastics. So yeah, that'll be a good question for Michael. Or you know, maybe they're going independent. Like
maybe it wasn't a bad question.
Yeah, it's a good question. They might be going independent like baseball because really, you know, conference standings and conference meets, they don't matter all that much in gymnastics.
Right. It's just it's an opportunity for you to get scores.
Yeah, it's all on what your scores are at your meets. That's how you get to nationals.
Just like track and field. And back in the day, track and field dual meets were a big deal. But then they died out, and it was just, hey, let's go to this tournament, that tournament, because you need to get qualifying times.
Yeah, because the West Coast Conference does not officially sponsor track and field, so there will not be a WCC meet.
Yeah, and we had Louis on last year, and he was not happy about the situation. It was before the spring when we had Louis on. In fact, we got to get him on too. And he was not happy because he said, he goes, you know, on such and such date, all across the country, there is going to be
and you've got
league
no,
championships.
And you've got no place to go.
And we've got nothing.
So, you know, in 2 years when the new Pac-12 comes back, that they will have a track and field meet. I'm sure of it.
Well, we got a question answered, and I love that. I love it when we can come through and give an answer, and you had all the details on the Marion Berries for West Coast League Baseball. Brooks is here after years and years as a reporter. If you have any questions on what that life was like, how things have changed. Were you out retired prior to or after the changeover to pretty much digital taking over?
Actually, at just my 14-year anniversary of retiring from the GT just passed
Has
last
it
week.
Been so, that long?
Yeah, 14 years. I like to think I got out for me personally.
Yeah.
Just at the right time before cutbacks started, before we stopped you know, the newspaper doesn't, they quit sending people on the road for games before, you know, staff started letting go before, you know, it was already, I thought, bad enough that the paper was being printed in Albany, not in Corvallis anymore.
Right, right.
I got out just before the big, we still were two separate entities at that time.
Right.
So just before kind of the big merger into one regional newspaper. Happened.
We had Isaac Streeter from the Tribune on a couple of days ago, maybe it was last week, and I asked him a question that he didn't really get, and I didn't do a good job of posing the question, but essentially it was this. If you're young and you're in college now and you want to be a sports writer, what are the adults, if you will, what are the teachers, what are the mentors or even the people in the business saying to you to either encourage or discourage you about getting into the business? Because the business, and then that goes along with, has it come to an end? Is the newspaper business now done with changing and now set and going in the direction it will always be?
Yeah, that I don't know. But,
because we've been through it going to where they really tried to keep putting papers out. And then kind of like now it's more like, we're just going all digital.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if someone would ask me like a college kid, I would be very hesitant to get him into the newspaper business. It's long hours.
Yeah.
Low pay. I mean, you don't have a daily newspaper anymore.
Right.
And anymore, when I was there, you know, like I said, we didn't have Twitter. I mean, that was just kind of starting. Didn't have all this other stuff.
Right, right.
That basically that you have to become a 24-hour employee. That if, you know, if something happens at 9 o'clock at night, it used to be, well, you know, we'll get after it. I'll make some phone calls and get after it in the morning or whatever. That now it's like, oh, I got to be on Twitter because somebody else.
Right. Because digital is now.
Before. Yeah. So it's become all these things that were supposed to make your job so much easier.
I thought
they've made it a lot tougher, more involved and cutthroat and just.
Yeah.
You never get a break.
Well, you never ask a question. You're taught never to ask a question you don't already know the answer to, but occasionally you do. And I was thinking the answer might be something along the lines of there will always be a need for sports writers because there's always a story to tell. But is that true?
Well, sure, there'll always be a need for a sports writer to, you know, to write a story and stuff like that. But I, you know, it's getting away from more and more the beat reporting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and it's become more of features, profiles, you know, analysis pieces, stuff like that.
Which is all great stuff. Yeah, I love that.
But I used to like to, even after I left the GT, I'd like to get the paper every morning so I could see how Corvallis High was doing or Crescent Valley was doing, like how soccer, you know.
And see names and numbers.
Yeah, and now I just, you know, I mean, Joe Casey's the new coach at Corvallis High School. I have no idea how he's doing. I have no idea
how
Crescent Valley basketball is doing or how a Crescent Valley, I don't know who it was, but one of their fall teams, I think, won a state championship or went to the state final.
I think it was.
Without a daily newspaper, I don't know that anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can listen to the Cool Morning Update.
Yeah, that's too early for that me. Guy, I'm out walking with the dog.
That guy tells all the local sports.
I'm out walking the dog at that point. So,
well, there's radios you can wear. I stream, yeah.
I can get my Sony Walkman?
You just put you have a flip phone. If you had a smartphone, you could stream it while you're walking the dog.
I could, but then I wouldn't be able to talk to my friends about all the other stuff.
There you go. Brooks Hatch joining me. Let's take our first break. When we come back, lots to talk about and a lot of things that we can do. But if you don't want to hear us just blathering on between ourselves, because I'm going to ask Brooks his opinion on this and his opinion on that.
We can announce the new running backs coach at Oregon State.
Which I was unaware of, but you saw it on a board.
Yeah, I saw it on the World Wide Web.
On the World Wide Web, that's right. All right, phone number and the text line is 541-497-5356. 541-497-5356. Back after this on 1240 Joe Radio.
Hi, it's Colin. I know Mike Parker. Used to work with him in Portland. He's on right now with John Warren and the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Well, he's actually not, but I just wanted to play that because I love it. I love how personalized it is, and I look forward to being able to write more stuff for Colin because that show has great producers who are very easy to work with. With local stations.
Yes, I remember him when he was at KGW, I believe.
And at the same time, he was on The Fan with Mike.
Oh, he was on The Fan with Mike.
He had a show, an afternoon show.
Well, and now he's on at 1 o'clock, right?
He's on from 9 to noon.
9 to noon.
Well, 9 to 11, and then we pause the third hour like we did with Rome.
And Rome is still on at 1?
No, Rome will not come on because they don't want us to time shift.
Ah, well, that's a blessing. No more Jim Rome.
I agree with you. A lot of people like him, but honestly, I won't miss him one second.
It's not my taste.
It isn't mine either.
You know, it's not my taste like Jim Rome. Yeah. You know, I don't like Jim Rome.
yeah. No, I don't mind not hearing one stupid soundbite 100 times in an hour. Let's go to the phones, 497-5356. And Dave is on the line. And when the light lit up, Dave, when we were going to break, we went to break, Brooks and I both said, well, I don't know where Dave is. And I said, yeah, he usually calls by now. And then the light lit up, and I said, oh, there he is right there. And it was you. So hello, David.
Well, good morning. First, John, let me compliment you for bringing Brooks on. It's an inspired programming decision, and I hope it happens frequently in the ensuing few months and going forward into future years. So I have a question for Brooks. I just want to set it up by saying that I think, Brooks, you and I were among I remember distinctly the very first time I called a year ago, August, after the demise of the Pac-12. I called in and said, this is not the end of meaningful college football in Corvallis. And you have, and I cite it often, Brooks, as perhaps you can acknowledge or attest, that you said something to the effect that Oregon State might not be where we want to be, but where we ought to be. So my question, Brooks, is has anything happened either recently or over the long haul, the last 18 months, to make you any less of a believer in the fact that there is a future, big time, meaningful football for Oregon State? Has anything transpired that has made you less a believer than what I hope I have accurately characterized as your previous expression along these lines?
No, if anything, I've this past season just kind of reaffirmed my belief that, you know, college football is college football. As I said, it won't be at the same, I don't want to say, but, you know, it won't be the Pac-12. But the games last year, you know, I was entertained. We had tailgating. We had cheerleaders. We had bands. We had visiting fans. And, you know, maybe San Jose State isn't the obvious. I mean, obviously, San Jose State coming in every other year, which, I mean, won't happen in the future, but is not the same as USC coming in. But you have to deal with what reality is. And what reality is our new conference will be made up of 8, 9, or 10 teams that have similar athletic budgets, similar academic requirements, outputs, et cetera, similar, I would expect that there'll be similar NIL budgets, so we're actually competing apples to apples. And a team will come in here on Saturday, and the Oregon State will still come out wearing black or orange or white, and we'll have football, and it'll be exciting, it'll be good, and we'll have a chance to go play in meaningful bowl games. And maybe every 4 or 5 years, we'll have a season like Boise State had this year, and we'll be able to go to the college football playoffs if the SEC and Big Ten haven't completely choked off all access in their greed to try to get all the money that they can. So yeah, I'm if anything, I am more positive that this can be a good for Oregon State. We can't be Oregon. I mean, I was out last night. And I ran into Scott Spiegelberg and Doug Oxon and a couple other guys.
All the greats.
Yeah, and we were talking. And you know what? I've come to the point where that we have to just kind of separate ourselves from the University of Oregon. We're not going to be what they are. We are not going to spend. Oregon's athletic budget within 2 years is going to be up around $200 million. It's already at 150 something. They're going to spend another 20 to 25 million when it comes in house on NIL.
Yeah, and the Beavers are what, around 90 something.
Yeah, and we can't compete with that. So there's really no reason anymore, at least in football, to after next year. There's no reason to compete with them because it's not apples to apples. Like I said, the Oregon State will remain a land grant, sea grant, space grant, sun grant school, and Oregon. You know, this is the path they've chosen. They have the money. They're going to be a sports grant school that all their scholarship athletes are going to be earning, you know, NIL money, and their football team is going to be a $25 million a year payroll. So we just can't compete with that, and we'd be crazy to compete with that. So let's find some excellent universities on the West Coast and get together with them, which we have done, and have a new league and start a new, you know, blaze a new path.
Yep. Accept what it is and Brooks, try and enjoy it. Go ahead, Dave.
Brooks, that's a very memorable phrase. And the sports grant school. And I'm wondering if you've trademarked that and whether you coined that. But I agree with you to this extent. But from the very beginning, I've never had patience. And there's a caller. I don't want to call him out by name. But he calls in and he compares the budget down in Eugene is compared to Oregon State. I never had the patience for the woe is me attitude about all of this. Let's just move forward as best we can. But Brooks, I saw an intersection with your outlook, something you said to me privately at Goss Stadium last season. There's an intersection between an aspect of dialogue we had there on the Jack Riley Concourse, as Mike always likes to call it, and Ross Dellinger's now almost famous piece that Mike and John were talking about yesterday. And it's a follow-up to the previous little bit of dialogue in which Dellinger quotes the Ohio State Athletic Director. If they've got a financial nut that could crack as big as it is, you still have to work at it. You still have to raise the money. But here's the point, Brooks, and that brought an echo to our conversation on the concourse, namely the key to athletic department success is winning home games, putting people in the seats, and Ohio State's got to do it even with their number, and Oregon State needs to do it. And the comment you said to me, Brooks, was if it's mid to late November and Oregon State is maybe undefeated or only lost one game, that Research Stadium will be packed with people. And Brooks, it's that success that will enable Oregon State to compete effectively in its new realm. And I'm just wondering if you still agree with that, and whether that's the Ohio State analogy here fits perhaps in a lesser sense with the predicament at the other OSU, namely the one we love there in Corvallis.
Well, obviously both schools need to have people come to their football games to make money. But yes, I think if we are playing in the new Pac-12 next 2 years, because we don't have a conference championship to compete for in 2025, if it comes down to 2026 and it's November, I don't know, 18th, 19th, 20th, and we're going to be playing, I'm assuming that the, whatever they're going to call the Washington State, Oregon State game, that will mm-hmm. take the place of the Civil War and the Apple Cup.
Yeah.
That'll be the rivalry game. That if we're 6-1 in the Pac-12 and the Cougars are 6-1 and that game is for the Pac-12 championship, because I can see no need, if you're playing a complete round robin, there's no need for a championship game.
Right.
I think we'd sell that place out, or if it was late in the season against Boise. I mean, I think when we start playing Boise State, I think that's going to be just a tremendous rivalry.
Now, guys, Dave, before I want to interject something here while you're on the line, and we've got Brooks Akir, of course, to add to what you're talking about, to add to that, I think, would you not agree, you guys, that Beaver fan also needs to let go of any notion that you have power, whatever the number is, it used to be Power 5, Power 4, you may have Power 4 money for a while anyway, but the Power 4 status is also gone. So in other words, you're recruiting lower level athletes because you have a smaller budget and you're in a smaller league, and you're not going to dominate, because a lot of fans were duped into thinking, oh, this will be great. We're still going to be like a Power 4, and now we can recruit and get three to four stars and then dominate. But it's not the case, because once you lower and get into the culture and where you're at financially, you're on the same level as everybody else is at that level. Would you guys agree?
I would disagree with that, only because, like, say at Oregon State, my son's an alum, I'm a donor, I'm a booster, I used to work there. We never recruited, like, just say in football, generally never recruited 4- and 5-star athletes. Oregon State's made its bones with recruiting 3 stars and developing. So
yeah.
I don't really see how that's going to change, and that the people that we're competing against, we're going to still be competing for the same guys. So
Power 5?
No, but the same players that Oregon State recruited, the same type of players
that they used to,
we're still going to be going after those guys, because they're not going to be recruited by the 4- and 5-star teams generally.
Well, and Dave, before you answer, I guess I just thought of my own answer, and that is nothing matters anymore anyway, because you only get a guy for 1 year.
And I also think, you know, hey, if we're recruiting against Boise and Washington State and, you know, Utah State, hey, I say, bring it on, because our facilities are better than theirs. Our fan base is better than, I mean, historically we outdraw Utah State, say, 2-1. Mm-hmm. We outdraw Colorado State by at least a factor of 1.5. I mean, if it comes down to us against them for an athlete, hey, bring it on, because we will win more often than not.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, I agree with Brooks basically on this. And John, there was a stretch of time in November and December where I was kind of trying to offer a dose of reality and common sense to this, because Oregon State was always, I mean, the truth of the matter was, this is when I was saying things like, Oregon State has not won a football title outright since 1956. It's only been to the Elite Eight once in 40 years. It's baseball program, not to put too sharp a point on it. But every school that was in Omaha in 2018 when we last won a title has been there at least once, many of them 2 or 3 times, excepting the University of Washington, which is an outlier and an anomaly. But everyone else that was in that field in 2018 has been back 2 or 3 times, except Oregon State. So I think the Oregon State fan base had, because of its association with a big conference that had SC, UCLA, the University of Washington, and of late, the University of Oregon in it. I think Oregon State fan drew an assurance by association with other people that was more reflecting the glory of other programs, not necessarily reflecting the accomplishment on the field or on the court of Oregon State. So I agree with Brooks.
Yeah.
We're going to get as good a level of player as we always have, maybe in an NIL context, a better. I mean, it looks like we're going to have the best quarterback coming in since Sean Canfield.
I mean,
experiment will determine. But that's my answer. I have one other point to make, but I wanted to answer that question, John, before going any further.
No, I'm glad you did. We got another caller, but go for it. What else you got?
Well, just quickly out the door, and that is, I just got an email yesterday from Oregon State. They've kind of rebranded maybe Brooks, you got this as well as a booster. Oregon State has already brought in-house the NIL program. In other words, the Dellinger article said everything is going to take effect July 1. But Brooks, the way I read that email, if you got the same one I did, is that the Oregon State is ahead of the game. They're already in the process of bringing Kyle Bjornstad's NIL program, or whatever the NIL program is going to be, in-house. It's on the Oregon State website, if I interpreted it correctly. And so Oregon State, because of the way it was playing this game, I think it's positioned well for a seamless transition on July 1, and I thought that was a positive development.
Well, we got Kyle on tomorrow, so we'll ask him about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, guys, nice talking to you. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. 497-5356. Before we take our last break, let's go to Eugene and see what Jerry wants to talk about. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I just want to say I really appreciate your guys' show. I listen often, but I don't call in because I'm at work. I'm at lunch right now. But I want to say a quick shout out to Sarah Acanto, I butchered her name, for coming on and being so forthright, answering the questions. That's amazing to have that kind of relationship and rapport with the fans. It means a lot to Beaver Nation. And then I just want to touch on a subject that's kind of been glossed over and people have said is eventually that we're going to go to splitting off football, and there'll be a power conference for football, and then you'll see all the Pac-12 schools come back, and we'll play them in non-football venues,
yeah,
like gymnastics, basketball, and all that such. And that's how it should be. And I argue the reason being is often football subsidizes all your other sports. So why should we make it easier for them to transition to where they can separate football, make more money than us, put more money into their non-football games,
yeah,
and then be ahead of the game in those leagues than us? What do you guys think?
I'll take it first, Brooks, but I want to hear from you too. Really good point. By the way, thanks for the props on the show and on Sarah. She's tremendous, and it's a great relationship that we have with her that she would do this. And she never shies away from a question. She'll dance around it if she can't answer it, but she'll certainly take it on. Anyway, to your point, the thing about what you're saying, though, is just people's predictions. And I don't put any stock in anybody's predictions because nobody knows. So I wouldn't get too concerned that there is going to be this big collapse and they're going to have 30 teams and everybody else will be doing. I just don't, we don't know. It's so crazy. We don't know. They, being everybody else in college sports, may be used to what's happening, even though we're only 1 year in, and just keep it going. I have no idea. But if it were to happen the way you're talking about, I agree with you. Why should we make it any easier on anybody else? So, Brooks, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. Is that like when Chip said this, football goes away, but Oregon still earns 90 when they finally get paid by the Big Ten.
Yeah.
They will be getting $90 or $100 million a year in media rights. and we're going to be getting 20 or whatever.
Right.
So that $80 million has got to get difference. Has got to get spent somewhere. They can't spend it all on football. It'll get spent on all their other programs. So a conference should be regional competition. Well, guess what? In the new Pac-12, we'll have that. We don't need Oregon and Washington to come back to play our soccer teams, to all that stuff, even though, you know, we maybe like to play them out of conference. But we don't need them to have a regional athletic conference. So if they want to break away, hey, break away. But you know what? Part of breaking away means you still got to send your soccer team, your baseball team, your softball team. You got to go to Rutgers in Maryland.
Yeah.
I mean, this week, Oregon is at men's basketball, is at Ohio State and Penn State. I've looked at the weather back there. It's like going to be 20 degrees and snowing in Columbus tomorrow night. What's today, Wednesday? Thursday night. And like 10 degrees and snowing in at Penn State on Saturday. So, hey, you know what? You wanted the Big Ten? Well, open the door, look outside.
I know, I love that.
You got the Big Ten.
I love that. And, Jerry, here's one thought that I have. It may be true for all Beaver fan, and that is the more we accept what Dave and Brooks were talking about, the more we accept where we are and kind of get into a world where we enjoy it and we're looking forward to battles with Boise State and things like that, then the less pain we have, the more we're kind of sticking it to them, because I think it's going to be difficult, as Brooks just pointed out with that basketball schedule. We already knew about it. We talked about it, saying Cal and Stanford are nuts. But it's starting to come true. They're starting to feel it. They were in football, as some articles talked about. So I think the more we kind of get used to where we are and enjoy it and get a fighting spirit about it, it's like, hey, do whatever you guys got to do, but we're fine here. We don't need you. You know what I mean, Jerry?
I totally agree, and I've been there from day one. You know, all this talk was, I said, fine. We get to still watch student athletes.
Yeah.
Not student athletes that want to be pros and act like pros. And I also thought from day one that this would be a huge hindrance in recruiting in non-revenue sports like baseball. 3-game series on a weekend in Rutgers, you're going to have one day of travel back and forth. That's 5 days. Last time I checked, there's 7 days in a week. How can they be students?
Right.
You know, so I really feel like the non-revenue generating sports, changing conferences is going to be a recruiting hindrance to them for people that really want to be student athletes.
And there had been a few stories last year, some volleyball players, some softball players that said, I want my family to see me play because they watched me play from 9 years old on up. They can't go all the way across the country, but they can regionally.
I heard last night, again, with the esteemed gentleman that I was talking to, who know far more about Oregon State, the inner machinations, than I do, even though they're kind of retired, they still have contacts, that this is awful. The new quarterback.
That's coming in?
Yes.
Malik Murphy.
Malik Murphy. His parent, he's from Inglewood, California, which is L.A., the Forum.
Right.
His parents got to see one game of his last year because, you know, it costs a lot of money to fly out to North Carolina and all that stuff.
Right.
That this year, they should be able to see almost at least all of the Oregon State home games.
Sure.
Easy flight up from LA. You know, heck, you can drive up. They'll be able to see him play. And I think that is another thing that, I'm not telling the coaches anything they don't know. That's impossible for me to tell them something they don't know. But this, I do think with a lot of these sports, if you hammer the regional aspect of it, you're gonna win over maybe not everybody, but you're gonna win over some kids that want their parents to be able to come, that they don't want to get in an airplane and fly half the way
or
all the way across the country. I think it was Scott I was talking to. He has some friends at Cal or something that they're just, you know, it's only been half a year that they've been in the ACC. Mm-hmm. And it's already like ridiculous the amount of travel that they've had to do.
Well, and
that they're going to have to. I mean, Cal played at Clemson the other night.
I know.
Come on.
Anything with football, because football is only a few weeks out of the year. We got to take a break. Hey, Jerry, great call. Do it again. Thanks for calling from Eugene. Again, 497-5356. Back after this to wrap up this hour. Michael Chaplin, Oregon State Gymnastics, coming up at around 12:20. I think it was 12:20. I got to look at my phone. And we'll do that straight ahead here on 1240 Joe Radio. Brooks Hatch is sitting in the seat of knowledge. I'm John Warren, and this is the Joe Beaver Show. We appreciate your phone calls and your texts. We'll get to the texts as they come in. Dave has a question or two in these remaining minutes of this first hour. Hello, Dave.
Hey, I enjoyed listening to Tumwater ask Brooks about the position we're in football and if he's still, you know, kind of committed to that position. And I think it's a good, without being super specific, you know, I'm kind of, and I've been vocal about it, but I'm kind of under the belief that, like, eventually you're going to end up with two different entities involved there, the football, the upper echelon, and then the rest that, you know, I think we're going to be very competitive in. And like you said just a few minutes ago, the occasional once every 4 or 5 years, you know, we may be that team that gets to the CFP like Boise State did. I actually think that this next year we're setting up to be, I think we're going to have one of the better quarterbacks that's out there in,
we hope so,
you know, our conference. And it looks like we're building some pretty good offensive power with the tight ends coming in and everything else.
Yeah.
So I think that's possible, but, Brooks, would you be satisfied with that as an outcome where those, and I think the NCAA, I don't think that the media necessarily, the ESPNs and the Foxes, are going to stop until they kind of get what they want in that aspect anyway. And like you said, the Big Ten and the SEC are going to find ways to push those teams out eventually, or that's what they want to do. But also, you know, what do you think about the NCAA saying, we can't control it anymore. This just needs to be separate. You know, they're losing every lawsuit they turn around to. You know, they're not amateur athletes anymore anyway. They don't really have the governing authority, especially with those schools that are bringing in all that money.
Yeah, but hold on. Let's hear from Brooks. What do you think about that?
Well, I think your question was, would I be satisfied with us competing for the college football playoff every 4 or 5 years and competing for the new Pacific 12 or PAC, whatever yeah, number. I mean, I know they've taken out a bunch of trademarks. Yeah. Championship. Well, yeah, because that's what we have. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I'd be happy with it.
Well, you know one thing, guys, and we only have about a minute and a half, Dave. We haven't even thought about a new bowl alignment because ultimately it can still be about bowl games. There were some great bowl games this year, even though there were only 12 playoff teams. Now, they need to fix a few things so that players are actually playing in the bowl game. But if they can tweak a few things and get it to where players are playing in bowl games, then we can go back to something we've got used to, which was playing for a bowl game. Yeah, you can strive for a CFP, but if you don't get in, you can still have a great year and go have fun at a big bowl game.
And I also think, like, I watched a lot of bowl games with the non-Power 5 teams, unless you were at your coach left or something like what happened at Marshall and Washington State and stuff that. Most of the players in the group of five schools stuck around to play the bowl games because they know they're not going to go, you know, no guy's going to not play in a bowl game because he might be an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys play.
I had a couple of just suggestions on that I put forward a while back, but like, could they move the transfer portal to just bracket the spring practice?
You
get like 2 weeks on the front side.
I don't see why they couldn't.
2 weeks on the back side and eliminate the winter, where that way players don't even consider jumping their team after the regular season before the bowl games. They just do the movement once the spring.
Yeah, we're out of time. I'm gonna have to let you go. We're out of time. We'll answer on the air, but can you see any reason why that would fail a lawsuit if they decided to just do one open period in the spring?
Only if an athlete would bring a lawsuit saying that you are impacting my ability to make a living and by not allowing me to transfer in December for the next.
Well, you can fight it and say, well, no, we're not. You can transfer there.
NCAA is not doing so hot and fighting the
lawsuits. Well, I mean, what kind of lawyers do they have? And are they even trying? That's a whole different show. Michael Chaplin coming up, but we have a lot of other things to get to here on the program. We'll do that after the 12:05 break. This is the Joe Beaver Show.
Time to enter the Magic Kingdom.
Denise, would you kindly clear the wheels?
Okay, here we go. On three, one,
too.
Tweets and texts, faces and books. Tweets and texts and faces and books.
Seems like it's more about FM and color TV.
In such an age as this, is there any room left for something as simple as
radio?
We believe there is.
Touchdown, Beaver! He's got a chance to go! 20, 15, 10, 5! Touchdown, Beaver! Back in the end zone! Caught! Touchdown, Beavers!
The Joe Beaver Show is on the air with Mike Parker and John Warren. Two men on a mission to prove
that AM radio is a viable and modern source for news and entertainment.
So gather the whole family.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you don't have one, fret not.
I'll have the management send you up a radio.
Be a part of the triumphant return of amplitude modulation.
This is the big one, boys. This is the one that brings us back. Soon, AM radio will reign king once more.
It's the Joe Beaver Show on the home of the Beavers.
Cool beats, beats. Kill me!
1240 Joe Radio.
I don't know why, but that makes me laugh. That makes me laugh every time. 1220 is Michael Chaplin coming up, so we'll take a break here in about 10 minutes. Again, I'm John Warren. He is Brooks Hatch, and this is the Joe Beaver Show for this pretty good-looking Wednesday. And then tomorrow, TJ will join me, and we'll be doing that over Zoom, if you will, or whatever platform we choose. And I don't know how that's going to go because we won't be able to see each other, and I need visual cues. Otherwise, we'll be talking over each other, but we'll see how it works.
Just FaceTime with them on your phone. So that way you'll be able to see him do it.
Yeah, we could do that.
How about that? The Luddite came up with an idea.
Well, yes, he has to want to do that because we don't have cameras in the studio. They actually approached Mike and I about cameras in the studio 20 years ago. It was a thing to have cameras in studios. And we both said, absolutely not, not a chance. And you know what? No way, no how, because when we're off the air, we want to talk freely. We have a lot to say. When we got to keep this place clean, which we don't. There's a million reasons why we did not want to.
Think
camera
of all
in
the
here.
All the what do they call those things? Tchotchkes or whatever that you'd get from you see the set of the Dan Patrick Show or that he has some great stuff at that place.
Oh, that people donated to him?
Yeah, send in, you got the Mike Parker bobblehead here. We'd have, 50,000
of
those.
Yeah, probably.
I could get a spider bobblehead.
Yeah, that's probably
could put
true.
A little Washington State flag waving in the background.
For the 325th straight Joe Beaver Show, the Washington State Cougar flag. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, well, they didn't come back to us after that. And it was kind of a thing where they were thinking about maybe doing the show in Portland, and it fell through. But, strange stuff. Okay, couple of things. Mike sent me this email yesterday, and I read this article. What did I do with it, Brooksy? Here it is.
The one about the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, the Rose Bowl. Now, you cleared things up for me during the break, and that is that the Rose Bowl pays, and we knew this, but I guess we forgot, because the Rose Bowl pays out, and it's $50 million for this year and next year. Now, that's split between the Cougars and Beavers. And thankfully, the deal that starts the new Pac-12 doesn't happen until the third year. So you still get half, not one eighth of it.
Mm-hmm.
But $25 million for the Beavers this year, $25 million next. The article, the way it was written, almost, and it was a Wilner about Wilner and whatnot. It was hinting, I guess, or leaning towards this idea that because Oregon played in the Rose Bowl, they got a payout. But you say no.
No.
It's a deal with the
It's a deal with the Rose Bowl. The Pacific 12 Conference gets, as it said, $50 million. So since the Pacific 12 Conference until, August 1st, 2026 or whenever it becomes official, is Oregon State and Washington State, that we get that money. And I'm sure that, as we said off the air, that there's a certain amount of it has to be taken for conference administrative fees. I mean, someone's got to pay Teresa's salary.
Right.
This is how you pay it, income through the Pac-12. But, as we said,
you're going to be keeping a lot of that $25 million.
Yeah, and, let's be petty, small, and vindictive here, which, I'm often accused of being.
No.
How wonderful was it for Oregon State and also for Cougar fans who have no love lost for our friends down the road,
yeah,
to be able to sit there and watch that game and know that not only are we getting them get to see them get their butts kicked, we're also earning $25 million apiece. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of satisfaction
yes,
in that.
Yes,
knowing that you're getting money.
And I, as I said, if that makes me a small, petty, and vindictive, well, you know,
that's fine.
Hey, you made your bed.
That's
so.
The sports world. Yeah, well, it's like what I touched on a little bit late in the hour, last hour, and that is that it feels much better the further away from the pain that you get. In other words, we got dumped. We were broken up with. And we went through the pain and the, what? Come on, please take us back. Okay, well, where are we going to find someone new? Okay, I got to find someone new. Well, more time has gone by, more time has gone by. And you're like, okay, well, we're doing this. And as Dave said, and another caller said, you know, if we can just get used to where we are and enjoy it and like that and be competitive in that sense, we're further away from the pain of the breakup. And then it's like, we forgot about the $25 million per year, per team, so it's $50 million when it's done. It's like, oh, yeah, that's kind of nice to have that, even though we knew in the beginning we had that.
Yeah, and maybe, you know what, maybe the old girlfriend's new boyfriend isn't quite as as cool as
which
as
we have touched
looked.
On already, you know? About the travel schedule and recruiting.
Yep.
So no doubt. Who did you hear? I don't have any information on a new coach that's been hired unless it's come into my email.
I don't know if it's
email.
Been on the web, but I saw a release. I think it was, it might be on osubeavers.com, but a new running backs coach comes from, I still call it the University of Buffalo. It's technically called University at Buffalo, the State University of New York at Buffalo. Ray Pickering, I believe, is the man's name.
Okay.
And UB has had, he was at Norfolk State in 2023. At UB last year, UB had new coach Pete Lembo was their head coach. But they had their most successful season since they brought football back after dropping it in the 70s. So they won 9 games. They won the Bahamas Bowl. They had a great running attack. They had, UB has had a stable of really good small college, but, you know, Power 5 level running backs the last 4 or 5 years.
Kind of, I found an article.
A lot of guys like Hankerson, a lot of smaller guys that are really good running backs. And UB had a really good offense this year, and the running backs had a lot to do with it.
From Beaver's Edge, according to reports, Oregon State and head coach Trent Bray expected to hire former Buffalo running back coach Ray Pickering, would replace Thomas Ford, who was hired as Idaho's head coach. Best of luck to him, by the way. Pickering will come to Corvallis after spending one season with the Bulls. After they boasted very good rushing attack, I.J. Henderson had 1,100 yards. Let's see, da-da-da-da-da. As a team before Buffalo, Pickering spent a year at Norfolk State, as you mentioned, and Texas with Spartan before being hired by Steve Sarkisian at Texas. He spent time at D2 Lane College in Tennessee, where he built his coaching career after beginning in the high school ranks. So Ray Pickering, according to reports, and Beaver's Edge, is going to be the new running backs coach at Oregon State. And, boy, he looks like he could still play.
Yeah, and I don't know what the connect. I mean, obviously, sometimes coaches are just hired out of the blue, like when Oregon hired Chip Kelly. You know, no one on the Oregon staff knew Chip Kelly. But I don't know what the connection here on staff is with Ray. But, you know, in order, I think, for him to be hired this fast. I mean, Robert Ford, what did he leave, 2 weeks ago or whatever?
Yeah.
That there someone had to know, has to know, someone on staff or somewhere has to know Ray. So anyway,
yeah,
you know, it's tough for the Bulls, but that's kind of, you know, how it goes. If you're a MAC team or a Sun Belt team, or if you have really good coaches, they're generally are ambitious and want to keep moving up the food chain.
Yeah.
And even though we don't have a league, the league that we don't have is probably still better competitively than the MAC, which I love the MAC, but
yeah,
the Pac-12 is going to be a better football league than the MAC.
Boy, I got so many questions for you. Here's a follow-up from Dave, who called at the end of that first hour. He said, just another question on portal that I brought up. If you can make it one spring portal instead of two portals, why not extend the ability of athletes to take online classes to finish their current semester at the college they are leaving? That lets an athlete physically move and not fall behind. In the academic world. That's a really good point.
Well, there's nothing that would stop a guy now if a guy is taking all online classes that he could, you know, he could leave and still continue to take on. The thing that the portal has to be so early in December is if you are going to say that these kids are student athletes and the NCAA makes a big point of that,
yeah,
then you have to let them be students. That is, let them announce that they're transferring early and take enough visits and to where they can have enough time to get to their new school to enroll
okay.
for the spring semester for all second right. semester.
You have taken the lid
and
off
now if you
of
just
Pandora's box.
If you do away with the whole student athlete thing,
yes,
then I guess that would be okay.
But okay, so here's the problem. And here's the problem. I don't know who's gonna solve it. They have 1 foot in and 1 foot out. Half, 1 foot is on the student side. The other foot is on the ridiculous money side. And I don't know that it's the schools or the NCAA that are allowing these things to happen when it comes, well, they're allowing it because they're trying to fight it and getting beat down. I guess the free trade is down. And that is the whole money side of things. But you can't be able to say, here, we'll give you $5 million to be our quarterback and then expect you to go to class on time.
Well, you can, but I also think, in fairness to the athlete, if, let's say, last year when Jonathan left, I know I said his name, I'm not supposed to say
it. Oh, you can say his name 100 times.
When he left, and a lot of kids, some kids went to Michigan State, and a lot mm-hmm. of kids left the program. But if you would have not only had the transfer portal in April or May, you would have had, I don't know, 15, 20 kids at Oregon State that Oregon State would have had to pay scholarships on
mm-hmm.
who had no, would have at least had to pay the scholarship for winter term that had no expectation of being at Oregon State next year.
Okay, yeah, that makes a good point. Then would it be...
Or it's kind of would have been unfair for these kids who knew that they were going to be leaving to enroll in school and stay there for, you know, 4 months or 5 months, even though they knew they would be leaving.
Oh, that I think that happens. You know what we haven't really talked much about that I believe happens is players who will play four games. This now an Oregon kid did this, but I don't know the motivation, so I'm not even hinting that this is the case. But play four games, already know. You're not going to stay here, and then pretend you're hurt for the rest of the year.
Yeah,
and then transfer.
Or they just say, you know, I'm not playing anymore, and I'm leaving.
And
to
I'm
preserve
leaving
my
yeah.
red shirt.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at that point, I don't know what the school's options are because I don't think you can. You can't stop the guy's scholarship because he's already been paid for.
Yeah.
But you can, you know, you can't use the weight room, you can't use the locker room, all that stuff. I do think that in a couple of years. When this is the last year of COVID eligibility, that ridiculous
yes.
extra year
yeah.
that they
yeah.
gave football players for, you know, the COVID season,
right?
That it's enabled a lot of kids to graduate and then still have a year of eligibility left. That's going to go away next year. So I think that will calm the portal down a little bit.
Now, before we go, we got a break because Michael Chaplin will be expecting our call, but would it help at all? I haven't thought about this. Would it help at all then to keep the December portal and get rid of the spring portal?
Well, I think the coaches would really like that for a large part because, you know, you go through, you have your signing day in December, you have your team, you have your February signing day, maybe add a few more. And then all of a sudden you think that you're all set. And then after spring practice, like, you know, let's say, you know, Thomas Johnson III, just pulling a name out of my hat,
yeah.
has this great spring practice and Alabama has seen him, and Alabama needs a wide receiver, so mm-hmm. Alabama illegally tampers, and I'm
right.
just using Alabama as
right,
an example,
right, right.
just tampers with him and gets his kid to transfer, then all of a sudden you've been through you know, fall or winter conditioning and all this stuff, counting on this guy going to be playing for you, and then all of a sudden, boom, he's gone.
Yeah.
So
well, that's happening, and that started a couple of years ago, and the first time I saw it was with this guy. He was a star in the MAC. And he ends up at some big school, and it was the first time I heard the phrase of the explanation of, wow, this new NIL and portal thing is creating a deal where guys go to these smaller schools, they get better, and then get poached by
yep.
the big schools, the blue bloods.
Which is what happens in business, it happens in newspapers, it happens in radio.
Not as often as it happens in football.
Well, because there's a lot more opportunities for that happen in football than there is in. You're not turning over 100 new radio jobs every year like you are in football.
I wish you were. all right, let's take a break. We'll come back with Michael Chaplin, talk gymnastics next on 1240 Joe Radio. All right, here we go. Welcome back. This is the Joe Beaver Show, and it is time for our one and only interview for today. Kyle Bjornstad is expected to join us tomorrow. Mike Parker will come on tomorrow as well. He's traveling right now, so we can't get him for every day that he's gone, but we can get him for a couple of days, depending on how long the trip is. Oregon State Gymnastics just came off of a meet that involved, at the time, I believe, 10th-ranked UCLA and Cal, also a top-ranked program, and the Beavers did really well. Michael Chaplin, associate head coach, Oregon State Gymnastics. Is this yourself and Tanya's, did I read this correct, 28th year?
Yes, that's correct. Year 28.
Wow. Congratulations for one school and all the great success you guys have had. I mean, that's absolutely amazing.
I appreciate that. We consider ourselves to be very fortunate to be here in Beaver Nation that long. And it's been, an absolute blast and love being part of it.
Well, think about this. I'm you're old, and I can say that because you're younger than me. And
I think only by a year, though. I think we're pretty close.
Yeah, okay, but I can say that, and then I'll follow that up by saying, okay, so imagine you had, let's say, a senior who's 22 years old 28 years ago. They're like pushing 60 now.
Yep.
Just, you know, letting you know that.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've noticed is that those kids that I coach, so those gymnasts when we first started, have children that are old enough to be on the team now.
Oh, yeah. So oh, yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Anyway, great stuff. Hey, tell us about, we're going to get into a number of things because I love having you on. We can cover so many different things. But someone had said, we were talking on the Joe Beaver Show, and I don't remember if it was a texter, saying something about perhaps potential scoring changes, more Olympic-like, less Olympic-like. What can you tell me about that as I look at these scores from last week?
Well, so every 2 years, we change some rules. Like we try to not change every year, but we also kind of falls in place with the Olympic Games. So this was a rule change year where we changed value. I don't want to get too technical, but the values change for certain skills. So typically this kind of year, when you start the judging's a little tighter, you'll see some tighter scores. So I think that kind of reflected a little bit. We felt really good about the athletes' performances, and that's what we focus on. They did a fantastic job, but some of the scoring might be a little bit tighter, and you'll see that around the country a little bit. As long as judges are consistent is what you're looking for. That's the main thing. So there's things we work on, and then hopefully as the year progresses, our scores will go up because we'll judges will lighten it up a little bit, or we'll adjust and do our routines precise so that we'll get a better score.
Okay. So I have a follow-up to that just for clarification. Yep. The Olympics are over. So shouldn't they get looser and be tighter? I thought you said tighter as you get to the Olympics.
So what happens is first of all, the Olympics are scored differently than how we're scored.
Right.
They're on Olympic level, so you can go above a 10. And with the college rules, we go by a developmental program. Level 10 is what we use for scoring. And 10 is the highest you can score, right?
Yeah.
But the rules change, right? So that they'll adjust the rules or make things more difficult to get to that 10.0. That's the easiest way I can explain it. So after the Olympics, it is actually tighter. And then as you go along, either the gymnasts get better, the judges relax a little bit. It's hard to explain, but it's the nature of our sport, you know, that we tend to start to compete to the new rules and adjust to it ourselves. And then the scoring relaxes a little bit. Like this time last year, you saw a lot of 10-0s almost the first weekend. But this weekend, there were zero 10s. No one scored a 10 in the entire, you know, out of all the colleges. So that'll start happening a little bit as the season goes on. But right now I would say things are a little bit tighter. And that's just the nature of college gymnastics.
Well, Jade Carey got a 9.950 on the beam. That must've been near perfect.
It was excellent. And, you know, and that people like Jade, some of the top athletes in some of the top schools will they'll be the first ones to start scoring those tens. But Jennifer McMillan went 9.925 and actually beat Jade on bars. So Jen did a great job as well. And so super big scores, and we just got to keep pulling up all of our scores and all of our routines, and we should be in good shape.
Does this team have a 197 in it?
Yeah, for sure. I think as we go on, I believe we can definitely get that. And so it's just a matter of us putting it all together. And again, with the as long as this, it won't matter as much if I know that's a score that a lot of people are looking for.
Yeah.
But you'll see what the top 10 scores are, you know, and that's kind of where we want to be, in that top 10, top 8 around the country.
Yeah.
And in the averaging. So we'll get there.
No, I just started to get used to scoring and what to look for.
Yeah.
Last 2 years ago, and there was quite a few 197s 2 years ago. Last year, one or two 197s. I thought, why is it more difficult? Well, maybe because they don't have the star quarterback anymore. But they do, because you have Jay Carey. Well, anyway, I digress. So then I see you've got Cal, who's wonderful, and UCLA, and neither one of them came close. Well, Cal had a 196. So I guess because it's tighter, I would have expected at least the winner of that group of three to get a 197.
Yeah, and Cal was ranked, I think, top was fourth in the preseason ranking. UCLA was 10th, and we were 19th. But ranking is just like any other sport, right? Everybody kind of guesses where they think people will fall. And I definitely think we can be a top 10 team. But, yeah, just kind of think of it as this. They're, you know, when you watch a baseball game and the umpire's calling the zone a little bit tighter than maybe somebody else would, right? Where you'd be like, damn, that was a strike
somebody
else calling, but maybe, you know, this time it's not. And it's just that individual who's perceiving that strike zone. Same thing in gymnastics. The individual can be a little bit tighter than scoring than maybe somebody else. Like, oh, that was a good handstand. I'm not going to take deduction. And another judge is like, oh, that was 10 degrees off.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the tenth there. Yeah. So it's individual, right? It's human nature and human error or human judgment.
Oregon State Gymnastics Associate Head Coach Michael Chaplin in his 28th year, along with wife Tanya Chaplin, the head coach, 28th year. It's fantastic joining us here on the Joe Beaver Show. There's so much going on in the last year and a half with different sports. So I asked Brooks, he didn't know, and so I'm asking you, what are you guys competing in? What league are you in? Are you in a league? Are you independent? And what do you think you'll be doing going forward?
So we are independent. We're a lot like baseball, right?
Okay.
So baseball is not really in a league. They, you know, and us reached out to a lot of other schools and just have made our schedule. Gymnastics is a little bit easier to do that because there just aren't as many, if that makes sense, on the West Coast. So we're still like this meet competing against Cal and UCLA. We'll still go to Stanford. Washington will come to us. And then we'll have a few other people, Air Force is coming to us, San Jose State, BYU, things like that. So there'll be some difference with a few new teams that we don't see regularly. But this year and next year, that's kind of how we're going to operate. And then in 2026, Boise State and Utah State come into our conference, and they both have gymnastics. So then we'll probably, you know, look for some other universities that might want to be affiliates with our program.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be like wrestling, where you have, you know, create a Pac-12 conference with some affiliate teams, things like that. So those are all things that are on the table. But this year, next year, we're having an independent schedule, and that's just the way it works. But it's fine for us. Not an issue at all. Because the other thing about gymnastics, we don't have, like, that automatic qualifier, like your conference meet.
Right.
Like any of those meets qualify you on a national. That's not how it works to get to a national or regional championship. It's by score, right? You have to be ranked. And that's how you advance onto your regional championship and then the national championship.
So do you feel that you can get, I mean, their schedule are open enough where you can still get the Utahs, Cals, and UCLAs so that you yourself have that opportunity for those high scores?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the good thing is we'll still see almost everybody that we normally do, and we'll be in meets. Like, we're going to go to Auburn in about 2 weeks. So they invited us out, so we're going to go to Auburn. And they're obviously top 10, you know, consistent big SEC school. We'll go to a meet called the Metroplex in Dallas, where Arkansas, we'll see Arizona there, and some other teams. You know, so we will get every opportunity to get the scores we need. It should be consistent, and as long as we do our job, I think we have definitely, like I said, the ability to be in that top 10. That's our goal. And then try to advance all the way to Nationals top 8.
Now, last thing on this, and it's a great explanation. Does it hamper recruiting though? And it seems like it wouldn't, because you're so close to almost the way you used to be anyway. But does it hamper recruiting, or it does, and you just hit the whole regional aspect to it, like all the other sports have to do?
Well, I kind of compare us a lot to baseball, that they've done well enough, obviously, that people know you got a quality program and you want to be part of that.
Yeah.
We were real fortunate that Oregon State and Scott has committed to this program, and they got us this beautiful facility. Then Beaver Nation comes out. We have 4,000 or 5,000 people at all of our home meets. People want to be part of that. So it hurts a little bit, but we've reached out, and the recruiting was probably tougher last year. This year has been a lot better in terms of getting people interested, and they all realize, oh, Oregon State's going to be fine, you know. So it's different. Like, I'll use Oklahoma as an example. Last year, they were part of the Big 12. There were only four teams, really only three teams in that conference, and they're one of the best teams in the country, right? So that conference affiliation, like, oh, I got to be part of the SEC or the Big 10 or whatever, it's not really as important for gymnastics as you would think for maybe some other sports. But we're going to do fine, mainly because, you know, like I said, the commitment from our fans, from the university itself, and from the athletic department, really stepping up and supporting this program. And I think a lot of people that follow gymnastics around the country realize that.
And do you have to, last thing on the comparisons of other things, because, you know, we talk so much about football and what its meaning is. Do, and even basketball, do you have to fight for athletes through nil, outbid, in other words, a UCLA for a particular gymnast? Is that part of your world?
It hasn't really become as big a part of our world as maybe if football is, obviously, right? I mean, there are a few schools out there that I'm hearing that are throwing some extra money at athletes, but it's still not to the degree, obviously, that you're seeing in football and basketball and maybe some of the other sports. So I think, you know, we're going to be fine. And I think, like I said, the experience, the culture, and wanting to be part of the Oregon State program is something that's still a really strong draw.
Okay. A couple quick questions on some athletes, and then we'll let you go. Sage Thompson, 9825, as you mentioned. You've got other athletes. In fact, you've got a couple of athletes who came back from injury that had them sitting for quite a while. And did very well in the end. And Sydney Gonzalez and who else am I?
Lauren
Letch. Yeah. Talk about those two.
Yeah. Those are great. They're both seniors, and they're wonderful stories, because Lauren had some health issues, kept her out last year, worked really, really hard. She's been public with what she's dealing with, and was able to come back this year and did a great beam performance for us. And then Sydney had ruptured her Achilles, and same thing, came back and was in that beam lineup. And that, you know, it's a big shot in the arm to have those two seniors back. So we're super excited about that. Our junior, Jen McMillan, did all around. She was an exhibition on floor, but was still the fifth highest score, was solid for us on three events. I think you're going to see her really continue to shine and bring in some big scores for Oregon State.
Go for it, Brooksy.
All right, Michael, I have a question, not gymnastics related. You're driving up to the Portland airport, so you got about an hour and a half drive. Which Springsteen album do you put on? I would say which do you put in your CD in your car? It shows how old I am, but if you have to choose one, which one do you choose?
I have to pick one album.
You got to pick one.
The nice thing is, we're old, and we used to have to actually pick stuff. Now with playlists, you just playlists.
Yeah, but we're not letting you do that. You got to pick one.
All right, no worries. If I had to pick, I love Born to Run, but Darkness is great. But probably Born to Run. I'd pick that one.
You know what? I was thinking that's the one I would pick. It's 8 songs. There's 8 perfect songs.
it's an amazing album.
Darkness. I like Darkness would probably be my second. Probably my third would be Born in the USA.
Okay, now.
Anything after Nebraska, you know, you can just throw away. I'm not a big... Nebraska's really? Awful.
Yeah, I disagree. I disagree because what I like about Springsteen is his music has matured with him. Like, you see the Rolling Stones, they still think they're 18 years old. Springsteen, has, you know, this last album was a good album, and but it was a mature album, and so I like that.
Okay. All right, so clearly you have a Springsteen thing, but what music or album or artist would Tanya have on the the radio?
She loves Neil Diamond. She does love Neil Diamond, but also likes Billy Joel.
Oh yes,
and
yes.
Elton John.
Oh, I'm siding with Tanya on this one, big time.
Yeah, they're the pretty singers. Springsteen, Dylan, you know, they're the rough, gruff kind of lyrical type guys that I like. I can't sing.
All right, so before we let you go, for both of you here, I'm going to give you a little nugget. Information in this business is nuggets. So Springsteen comes to Lake Oswego in 80-something to marry Julianne Phillips. My brother and his buddy are in an old bar in downtown. Late at night, Springsteen comes in, nobody else around.
No.
Goes to the jukebox, plays his own song, and says, "Rack 'em up, boys." And they played pool all night.
No way.
Yeah. How about that?
Is that true?
Yeah, that is a true story.
That is very cool.
True
man.
Story.
Legend.
It's 40 years
that's
old,
awesome.
But it's true. Michael, thank
that's
you.
All right.
We'll get you on again. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Thank you. Go Beavs.
Go Beavs. Forgot to mention this weekend's home meet.
BYU, I think, right?
I got to look it up because I don't have
so I could see, you know, they're cruising up to Portland and Michael puts on Born to Run. Tanya goes, that's enough of that. She puts on like Honky Chateau or one of those old Elton John albums, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, which, you know, a double album has a lot of fluff in it. Honky Chateau is pretty good. Madman Across the Water.
Saturday, 2 o'clock, BYU, 22nd ranked BYU. By the way, the Beavers moved from 19 to 9. In the rankings in just 1 week. That's what happens when you're close to, when you beat UCLA and you're close to Cal.
Yes, strength of schedule, right?
Yeah, that's right. So BYU, number 22 BYU, Saturday at 2 o'clock. And, of course, the news came out yesterday, it was yesterday, and we highlighted it, and I'll just highlight it again, and that is that all the home meets for Oregon State, BYU, San Jose State, Alaska, UC Davis, Washington, and Air Force, are going to be on video. YouTube.com/Pac-12. So yesterday I gave a different address, which actually worked. Pac-12 in the YouTube search. So get to YouTube, go to the YouTube search and go Pac-12/gymnastics. That actually works. But another way is this way, just straight up in a search field, YouTube.com/Pac-12. And it'll take you there. I don't know if it takes you directly to gymnastics, but it'll take you there. So anyway, you can watch all of the gymnastics meets.
And, or drive to Gil Coliseum and buy tickets.
Well, that is true.
For those of us others that are out of town.
Out of town. We do have
out of town listeners, right? That, like Dave from Tumwater. And
Kyle from Southwest Florida.
Andy from Mitchell.
Where is Mitchell, by the way?
You know what? My wife looked it up the other day because we were thinking, where the heck is Mitchell?
In the gorge?
It's sort of over by John Day, I think.
Oh, gosh.
There's only like 150 people that live there. So.
Andy, are you really in a town that small?
Well, that's why he calls in because, you know, you could talk to one person. You could talk to every one of your neighbors. One a day, and you'd be done by June.
I mean, I know we're making fun and mocking, which is never good, but at the same time, that would be difficult.
Probably like a ranching community or something like that or whatever you do there. Yeah.
Well, it's a definite thing that you grow up in and get used to, I suppose.
I would think that if you live in a smaller town, though, that the internet is just like God's gift to
You know,
and Netflix and all.
I once worked with a women's basketball coach here at Oregon State way back in Judy's time. I can't remember her name. Sweet kid. She was a nice gal. She was older than me, but she was from Heppner. That's Eastern Oregon. Heppner.
Yes, Heppner.
And she said it was so small. They lived on a ranch outside of town, so they had to drive into town. And she said they had her parents. She grew up with every VHS movie that was ever made. They just bought them. They just bought. So they had this massive VHS tape library.
Well, yeah, that was probably before Dish.
Before
technology.
That's crazy. All right, last break of the hour, and then I want to go over something when we come back that just kind of puts a dot on the end of the sentence of Gil Coliseum because of a listener who sent me something in my email a couple of weeks ago. So it's on me for not getting to it, but I watched it, and it's really good, and I want to tell you about that. When we return, maybe get to a few texts here as well. 497-5356 of the University Honda text line. And I'll be right back. We will be right back on 1240 Joe Radio. Yeah, I know, a good conversation here off the air.
Yeah.
I did some research on this this video who was it? Mark Hoover sent this to me. Mark, I'm so sorry. I'm so long to get to it. It was a professionally produced video about Gil Coliseum and the anniversary of its making and all that. And we had great shows the week of the, 76-year anniversary. So I watched this video and I took a few notes. I believe it was AI that was voicing it. And you can tell when certain words come up and the AI butchers them.
Gil Coliseum.
It's something like that. Yeah. It's like, oh.
Out in philo math.
At first, I was wondering who did this because, you know, in this world of what we do, it's, oh, hey, why didn't they call me? I would have voiced it. But then after about two-thirds of the way through, there was a few of those words, and I just thought, oh, please, that's AI.
AI is cheaper than John Warren.
Yeah, that's right.
And you don't have to pay AI.
Darn right. But you pay, you get the best, right? You pay that's for the right. best. So this gal, Irene Carl, was featured in the beginning of it. It's kind of a takes you through the beginning of the to the end of the building of Gil Coliseum and a few highlights that we've already talked about. But there's a few things that I noted that were kind of interesting. Irene Carl was the first female president of the OSU Alumni Association in 1950. That's pretty big back then. And she was also president of her Alpha Chi sorority. But in 50, she was very instrumental in getting things going. In other words, hey, let's do this, and working with the president and others to get this idea of Gil Coliseum built. So without her, probably didn't do it. Now, she went to Oregon State. I don't remember the years that it talked about, but she was a captain of the women's basketball team. And a lot of people don't realize that even though modern day women's basketball started in the 70s, Oregon State has a huge women's basketball history that go back to the early 1900s.
Right. Those photos of the women with their hair all done up, and they're in bloomers and stuff.
And weird dress-like things. I don't know how they play in that, but no, it goes way back. So anyway, Irene Carl, okay, so you move along, and just a couple of anecdotes in the story. For example, when she was the president of Alpha Chi, which, by the way, was the first nationally sanctioned, I don't know if it was both fraternity and sorority or just sorority, but she was the president. At that time, the president of one of the fraternities called over, and they were going to have some kind of dance thing that the two did.
A soiree.
Yeah. And and that was probably the word used back then. So calls over and asks her if there's anyone who can take this 16-year-old freshman to this dance. And so she called around, couldn't find anybody. And so she took him. That 16-year-old freshman was none other than Linus Pauling.
Oh, wow.
As a 16-year-old who went on to win the Nobel Prize in 54 and in 62. Pretty impressive, by the way. The Pavilion was the first name. They called it the Pavilion. And then talked about Slats-Gill. And then the Board of Education in the state officially sanctioned it, Gil Coliseum. $1.8 million to build, which is $24 million today. Which is pretty impressive because it's a really nice building. And, you know, it cost $50 million to do one side of Reser Stadium. So,
oh, yeah.
So that's not bad. It was white. It was painted white in the very beginning. And from 78 through 1985, 71 sellouts. Those are little anecdotes I picked up from this video. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, I think
really cool.
It is probably the most historic athletic venue in our state. The only other place I think that comes close to it would be Old Multnomah Multnomah Stadium, PGE Park, whatever.
Oh, yeah, as far as history?
Because, you know, the Coliseum was for a long time, but not, you know, nothing happens in the Coliseum
right.
anymore. Right. The Rose Garden, well, all they have is the Blazers.
Mm-hmm.
But the number, the amount of stuff, not just sports, that's happened at Gill Coliseum with concerts, presidential candidates, graduations, all
that. And it went through all that.
It's the most historical venue in our state.
When we recap that... during that week long, we had all these guests on. But one question that no one could answer, even Kip Carlson, who is such a great archivist.
Stumped the Swami, right?
No one could answer that they ever saw or knew. I mean, we can all assume that that press box and the rafters was just that, a press box. But no one, and we got some pretty old people who went there as like teenagers when it was first built, could really say, yeah, I don't ever remember seeing anybody use it until... And this should have happened on day one of all of this memory with Doug Blair. Doug said, oh, yeah, when he was in school, KBVR would use it.
Yeah.
And he remembers using it.
And I don't know why they don't take it out, except that it must be weight-bearing and load-bearing, and they just can't remove it.
Yeah, too much of a hassle.
Turn it into like a super exclusive skybox. You know?
Except you'd be so high up there.
Yeah, but if they had enough drinks, no one would
care. Well, that's true. That's true. Let's get one final call in. Hey, Paul, welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Hey, guys, you were talking earlier about Volcano Stadium and the four teams that play there.
Uh-huh.
Are you not aware that the Volcanoes are coming back next year?
I'm completely unaware of that, and I'm proud to say that.
Okay, well, you haven't driven up I-5 then, because they have it plastered on their big signboard, Volcanoes back in 2025.
Well, I do go up there. I look at the field because it's really nice as far as the new artificial field they put in, but I know I have not seen that on the reader board.
Well, is it going to be an affiliated team, or is it going to be what? Because the only way I could see, baseball is not expanding, so they don't need any more minor league franchises. My only thought would be, are the Emeralds going there? Because the Emeralds aren't going to be able to get a new stadium in Eugene.
Yeah, do you know who it's going to be, Paul? I mean, what they're going to be affiliated with?
I do not. It just says the Volcanoes are back, you know, and it could be a different team other than the Emeralds who had to move or something, you know?
Yeah. Huh, I don't know. Interesting. Well, next time you drive by or next time I drive by, we'll look closer and see if there's any more information on it.
Or maybe you can look online for the Volcanoes website, maybe.
I'll do that as soon as the show is over. Thanks, Paul. Thanks.
Oh, you got it.
Thanks for the call. What do we got? Oh, we got a few minutes left. Let's go to the text line, shall
yeah,
we?
Yeah, let's see if I'd like to, you know, at some point the Pac-12 has got to pick two teams or one or two teams.
And,
you know,
for
we got to get to eight full-time schools.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We only need one more,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but I think that they want to get two because – and
so you can have round robin?
Well, so you can play eight conference football games and then only have to schedule four. And I know it's – probably people over there are going to be pulling their hair out, but
if they're,
I would just assume I don't want them to go to Memphis and Tulane. Then I know that
where
they're
would
trying,
you go?
You know what?
Who's left
at this point? I say take Texas State, take New Mexico State, call it good. You give Texas State, invite them in at 75% of the rights fees, bump them up 5% every year. You take New Mexico State at 50% of the rights fees, they would crawl to join the Pac-12. At 50% of the rights fees and bump them up every year. And so for the first 5 years, every Pac-12, the other seven Pac-12 schools get a little bit of extra money because you got that extra half share there. And I know they're going to, New Mexico State, blah, blah. Like, someone is going to finish last in your league. So, you know, you don't want it to be you.
This is the first time.
And they are a Western school. I just think that we need to stay in the West.
It took until the last 6 minutes of this show for me to disagree with you.
Well, that's okay.
That's a pretty good run. No, they're not good enough. Now, Texas State, okay.
Well, they're not good enough now because they don't have enough money. And they'll get more money with this. The only thing that everything that I have ever read about Memphis, and this is, you know, if someone's going to call me, you don't know what you're talking about. And, you know, that's probably true, is that, you know, that they are, that they have caused, not problems as their own, but they've just kind of been, as a conference member, kind of been needy. So, you know, you let Memphis in. So after the first year, they're going to say, oh, well, we discovered our travel costs were a lot more than we thought. So we need a conference. We need an offset for the rest of the conference for our travels. And then all of a sudden,
they came in here
and the travel to Memphis and then down to Tulane. Wilner has said, not, you know, he's not God or whatever, but that basically the TV contract is baked. I mean, they got to get a final number, but the addition or subtraction of any one particular school
isn't going to matter.
It isn't going to matter that much.
Okay. All right. So you take that out of the equation.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, so if you're only going to get, say, plus 500,000 per team by adding like Memphis and Tulane,
yeah,
you're going to blow through that in added travel costs in.
Well, that okay. If it works out, if the math works out that way,
you know,
but maybe you get more than that.
My opinion doesn't really matter. They're going to do whatever they do.
Well, that's what this show's for.
As I think, I called in that one time. There's a war on Western football. That Fox and ESPN have declared war on Western football.
Does anybody have you read or has anybody hinted at what the platform would be? Would it be Warner Brothers and the TNT group?
Oh yeah, I don't. I haven't
because
seen
one
any
thing
that
I read
John Canzano.
Yeah,
but I have not seen that. But
one thing that I read was that, or heard in an interview, was that the CW is not going to be a big money thing. Even if they wanted to concentrate more on sports, they're not big enough to provide big money.
Yeah.
So really, what the deal is this year, and I guess they have to make a new deal for next year.
Sure.
Is what it's going to be. It's not going to be.
Yeah, with the CW, but then maybe you also partner with TNT or TBS
or heck, Apple.
Yeah.
Why not go the streaming route?
But I just think stay West. And at some point, you know, again, these guys over at Gill are probably going, man, that guy just needs to shut up. But at some point, this dispute with the Mountain West, it needs to end. That we need to settle this thing. We need to be friends.
Oh,
we need to quit. Ooh. We need to quit spending money fighting each other when the Big Ten and the SEC are the enemy, and we are going to need the Mountain West for football, even though it would help. But we are going to need the Mountain West for scheduling, for convenient regional scheduling in other sports.
That's the smart, wise, more mature look at it.
Well,
the
I get
less
to be that once
mature
in a while.
Way, the fighting, scrapping, immature way is my way, which is. We don't like them anymore. We'll crush them at all costs.
No, I at some point you have to. I don't want to say band together because that's redundant and it means the same thing. Sometime we have
haven't
to
thought about that.
We have to make peace with the Mountain West and restart scheduling
okay,
them.
All
even
right.
If we're going to play eight conference games, we're not going to want to play. We'll play.
We're down to a minute and a half. So let me ask you this:
Power Five team, but we need to play. We need to play the Mountain West in baseball,
basketball,
all that stuff.
If you're going to reapproach Memphis, why not reapproach UNLV?
Oh, because I don't think you want to. I said we need to settle with the Mountain West. Reapproaching UNLV, that just starts the war even more.
That's true, but I'd like to see them over New Mexico
State. Well, then, you know, that's a, that's a mistake if they were actually invited, which the Pac-12 says they weren't. That they made by not coming.
Doug from Salem writes in and he says, our best quarterback is off to medical school. He was a great Beaver MVP of the Las Vegas Bowl. Glad we had him. Agree with you in every aspect. Yeah, he was the best quarterback this year. I thought he should have started at the beginning of the year, but nobody listened to me. And he turned out to be tremendous. But they have Malik Murphy now, and there's going to be, they may even bring in someone else. Oh, and the freshman kid coming in, that's real good.
Yeah, and we also went out and scored 40-some points a game for the first 4 or 5 weeks under Jelani McCoy.
Yeah, and then that changed.
And then we also scored 13 points with Ben quarterbacking against San Jose State.
Yeah, I mean.
The problem was this year there was no best quarterback.
There was not, exactly. And I love Ben. I do. I love Ben Gulbranson. I think he's a great kid, smart, going to be a doctor. And he did give a calming presence on a lot of his throws. He also had some throws that everyone, including himself, would love to take back after they left his fingertips.
Yeah, like San Jose State.
Yeah.
Pick six ball game.
Right. So
which happens to every. I'm not picking on him.
No, but no, you're right. And props to Ben Gulbranson. I forgot about that. That was one of my stories this morning that it's official that he's not going to be with the team. But best of luck to Ben moving forward. And by the way, on Malik Murphy, I'm holding out. After DJ and others, you get all excited. I'm like, let's see some work before we get too excited.
But, you know, I'm not of the – I thought DJ did okay.
I did too, actually. We don't have time to break it down. Thanks for coming in. We'll do it again soon. TJ with me tomorrow right here on 1240 Joe Radio.